You're listening to the Worldwide Freedom Broadcast Network. With studios in Eager, Arizona, broadcasting on satellite GE1, transponder 7, 7.56 audio, and over 700 FM stations across the nation and around the world. The Hour of the Time is also carried on WRMI, Worldwide Shortwave Radio, 9955 kHz, Monday through Friday nights, 5 until 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
This is my daddy's station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM, Eager.
You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, make sure you have pen and paper, as always, by your side. Make sure that you remember my admonition. Listen to everyone. Read everything. Believe absolutely nothing unless you can prove it in your own research, your own investigation, in your own right. Now, when I say listen to everyone, read everything, believe nothing from no one, from no source, unless you can prove it in your own research, I mean including me, including your mother, including your preacher, your priest, your neighbor, your husband, your wife. This is the age of deception.
Never in human history has so few taken so much from so many of America's Illuminati and their warlords of Wall Street and Washington. In just 8 years, these banksters and international government gangsters took it from the greatest creditor nation to the largest debtor nation on Earth. Our standard of living has dropped like a rock for 4 out of every 5 Americans. They're foreclosed on our homes, our farms, our factories. They've exported your jobs and surrendered our arms.
Idea. A
FBI, the ATF, and the FDA. They don't give a damn about the POW and the MIA. Hillary, Billary, Hitler, Marcus, and Mao. They want a new world order. They want it all. And they want it now. This Illuminati imports the dope. They create the chaos. Bring us out. Crush our hopes. They created AIDS. It's their designer disease. To bring you down. To globalize your game. They want to vaccinate your child and give them the mark. They want to illuminate you and keep you in the dark. They want you to pay for it with plastic surrender your soul. They want you under their thumb.
Under their control. They want it all.
A new world order. A new world order.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is a big idea, but it is beyond the grasp of most people as to what it could possibly really mean. Everybody said, this is nice, the world is coming together. I've heard this on many occasions from people who, in all other aspects of their lives, appear to be at least a little intelligent. But when it comes to these touchy, feely, fuzzy, emotional, liberal BS, it appears that their brain just drains right down into their shoes and stays there for a while. How in the world can anybody say that the New World Order, our one world government, our world federalism, our the new world economic order, I don't care which term you use, it all boils down to the same mistaken conclusion, when there is absolutely, ladies and gentlemen, nothing for you to base those feelings upon. For instance, here in the United States of America, we have a constitution. This constitution guarantees us a republican form of government. Now, never mind the fact that the constitution is in the process of being subverted. And a lot of what the constitution limits government to is being ignored, and many of the rights protected by the Constitution for the American people have already been stripped from us and thrown in the trash can. Never mind that, let's look at the document itself. It is a document that tells us exactly what type of government we are supposed to have. It is, in fact, the supreme law of the land. Now, supreme law of the land means that it is the final word on any subject. It is the government, ladies and gentlemen, or at least what the government is supposed to be. We can read that document, the Bill of Rights, and the Articles in Amendment thereto, and we can see exactly what our government is supposed to be. We can see what powers have been granted to government, how those powers have been limited. We can see what powers have been granted to the states, or because they have not been prohibited to the states, nor granted to the federal government, reside within the states, and if the states fail to exercise those powers or to claim those powers, then they lie with the people. We know what we have. We know what we had. We know pretty much where we're going. And we know what it's supposed to be, which at the current time, it is not. Now, there's no mystery in all of this, ladies and gentlemen. Why would somebody give up a document that guarantees their freedom, that recognizes individual creator-endowed rights of the people, and has set out clauses to protect those rights from being infringed upon by government or by anyone else? That limits the power of government. That creates opportunity. And in fact, was the document penned by our founders that for the first time in the history of the world ever truly set man free. Why would anybody give that up? For some vague promise of some undefined, unoutlined, unseen promise of some utopian world government that is supposed to guarantee your well-being. Everybody thinks that it will be some kind of wonderful dream come true. Yet there is no evidence of that. The fact that it's going to be socialist tells us an awful lot about what is coming, doesn't it? How can we tell? Well, it's very simple, ladies and gentlemen. We look at the history of socialism. We look at every country on earth that has a socialist government. We look at the ultimate extension of socialism, which is communism. We read the writings of Karl Marx, Friedrich Engels, the writings of V.I. Lenin, Stalin, Trotsky. We look at the great socialist experiment that was the Soviet Union. We can venture southward from our southern border to Cuba, and we can see how that has worked. And so we know that the great socialist dream is nothing but a lie. We know that the great socialist promise is nothing but a lie. We know that socialism, when absolutely applied, does not work, has never worked, can never work, will never work. We know that socialism always results in loss of freedom and varying degrees of control over the population, which always increases as time goes by. These are not guesses, ladies and gentlemen. These are truths. And these are truths that anyone can discover upon the sloppiest, most basic investigation that can be conducted. These are things that we know. So why is it that a great number of the population keeps propelling themselves in that direction, which is guaranteed failure, based upon the theories and the philosophies of a man, Karl Marx, who was an abject, total failure in everything that he ever did in his life? He was a Jew who hated Jews. He hated blacks. It's in all of his writings. He was a racist. He made no secret that the purpose of socialism was the ultimate control of the masses. The man abandoned his family. Couldn't write very well. Most of his ideas and writings were abject and obvious plagiarisms from Friedrich Engels, who also supported him because he was not able to support himself. Karl Marx never made a nickel in his life. He was a parasite. And maybe that's why his system of socialism so appealed to him. You see, it is a religion for victims. socialism, ladies and gentlemen, is a religion for victims. And without a victim class, socialism cannot exist. Why do you think they're trying so hard in this country to make every person some kind of a victim of something or someone? Because they must have more and more victims in order to convince them that socialism is the answer, because socialism promises a daddy to take care of the children who are victims of the world around them. Isn't that true? Well, of course it is, ladies and gentlemen. How do they bring this about? How do they fund these tremendous projects and think tanks and black projects and covert operations and propaganda machines that bring this thought process about? Because this is not a thought process that develops naturally in the minds of any individual human being. It is something that is inculcated, brainwashed, if you will, through a process known as psychopolitics. Psychopolitics. And next week, we're going to be covering brainwashing and psychopolitics, the Soviet system, which is, in fact, the international communist socialist system of bringing about the future that they perceive they want the world to be. But all this must be financed, ladies and gentlemen, and how is that done? Well, that's going to be the subject of today's broadcast. I'm going to tell you how it's done. I'm going to tell you where that money comes from. I'm going to tell you what that money is used for. I'm going to tell you into whose pockets it goes, and I'm going to tell you why. So you had better be prepared with pen and paper and an open mind. And remember what I told you. Read everything. Listen to everyone. Believe absolutely nothing unless you can prove it in your own research, in your own right, in your own investigations. Remember, the truth is elusive at best. And if you depend upon someone else to tell you the truth without doing your own checking, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm going to give you plenty of documentation today from which to conduct your research. And there's much more out there. Much, much more. And I'm going to begin, excuse me, I'm going to begin years ago when I was just a young man. And had volunteered for Vietnam in my vast stupidity and ignorance, thinking that I would be serving my country. Was not true. Vietnam wasn't about this country or the Constitution or freedom or any of those things at all. I received orders, ladies and gentlemen, to report to the United States Naval Security and Intelligence School on Coronado Island at San Diego, which I did. While there, I was trained for many things. One of which was to function as a Pacific Area briefing team member, as a member of the Office of Naval Intelligence. I was trained on external and internal security procedures. I filled out all the paperwork that was necessary for me to receive the highest security clearances that could be obtained. I went to special schools for booby trap identification. And disarming. And then, for some strange reason, after all of that specialized training, I was sent to Vietnam to a place called Camp Carter, which was the headquarters of Naval Security and Intelligence in I Corps. At Camp Carter, I was invited into the commanding officer's quarters. And he asked me, Cooper, how would you like to command the patrol boat? Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's not every day that an enlisted man in the United States Navy is offered the command of a combat vessel in wartime. And so I did not hesitate at all. I said, Captain, I would love to command a patrol boat, although I'm not sure that I have any of the qualifications that would be necessary for me to do such a thing. He told me not to worry about it and dismissed me. And within a couple of days, I received orders to report to the Da Nang Harbor Patrol commanding officer, and I did that. And I was told by him that I was going to be given command of a 45-foot picket boat. I had no idea what he was talking about. Never seen a picket boat in my life. Didn't even know what one looked like. He said a load of them had just come in on a freighter, and they were moored to a buoy beside the Harbor Patrol pier, and that I was to go down and go through all of those boats and take my pick of the one that I wanted. So I did that. I went through all the boats, and I picked the very best boat that was in the best shape that needed the less maintenance and preparation for combat duty. And then I began to select a crew. Well, I served as a patrol boat captain with this picket boat in the Da Nang Harbor, which mainly was maintaining the security of the ships moored or anchored in the harbor, offloading, loading supplies for the war effort. And this picket boat was really something, ladies and gentlemen. I really had enough weapons and ammunition to do just about anything that needed to be done, anywhere that it needed to be done. And then later was transferred up to Quaviet, near the DMZ, where I served again as a patrol boat captain, only this time as on a river, with the Dong Ha River Security Group, which was another branch of naval security and intelligence, as was the Da Nang Harbor Patrol. And up there, we participated in combat on a nightly basis. And that's no exaggeration at all. Every night, one or two, sometimes three or four boats on the river came under fire or brought the enemy under fire, and we participated in combat action. While there, I earned the Naval Commendation Medal and the Naval Achievement Medal, both with the V for Valor. Our unit earned the Naval Commendation Medal and the Presidential Unit Citation, and a whole bunch of others that I can't even remember. When I left Vietnam, I went to the USS Charles Berry DE-1035 as an undercover agent for the Office of Naval Intelligence, actually ONI. And when I had uncovered what I was sent to uncover and made the arrest that I was instructed to make, I was then transferred to the Commander-in-Chief of the United States Pacific Fleet and assigned to the Intelligence Briefing Team. At that time, I was a second-class petty officer. And when I was on watch, I was the petty officer in charge of the command center. And when I was not on watch, I served on the intelligence briefing team for the Commander-in-Chief of the United States Pacific Fleet. I saw every thing, ladies and gentlemen, of a classified nature that came into that headquarters. I assisted in the preparation of all of the briefings that were ever conducted for the Admiral and his staff while I was assigned to that command, and to high-level government officials when they came to participate in those briefings. While on watch, I was the designated SPCAT operator, which is special category, top secret messages. I was the one who encoded messages on the KL-47 and sent them out when top secret sensitive information or sensitive compartmentalized information communications were sent directly from the command center. Now, you have to understand that normally they're sent from the communications center, which was on a level below the deck that the command center was on. But when a message needed to be sent immediately, I was the one who did that. When top secret messages came in on the KL-47, on the teletype, or when they were sent up to the command center from the communications center, all top secret messages, all top secret SI, or sensitive compartmentalized information messages, passed through my hands while I was on watch. Now, I was not on watch every day, ladies and gentlemen, so I didn't see every single thing that ever came in while other people were on watch. But during my watch, I did. And as a member of the intelligence briefing team, I had access eventually to almost everything that would ever happened that the Admiral needed to know while I was attached to that command. And one of the things that I learned while I was attached to the Commander-in-Chief of the United States Pacific Fleet was that most of all of the drugs that come into the United States of America, ladies and gentlemen, are brought in through the intelligence community, specifically under the oversight of the Central Intelligence Agency. I learned that these operations had been set up in the early 50s in order to fund black projects and intelligence operations that could not be allowed to come under the oversight of anyone in government or of the Congress. And that in order to bring about a peaceful world under the United Nations, vast amounts of money were needed for propaganda efforts. And for subversions of the governments of the sovereign nations worldwide, including the United States of America. Now, this may be a little difficult for many of you to swallow, but nevertheless, it is true. And I'm not telling you third hand or fourth hand, I am telling you of my own experience. I am an eyewitness. It is a fact. Everyone in the intelligence community knows this. Everyone in the Federal Bureau of Investigation knows this. Everyone who has ever conducted any investigation into the source of drugs that enter the United States of America knows this. Many studies have been made. Many books have been written. Many congressional investigations have been conducted, and they always end at the doorstep of the Central Intelligence Agency without fail, without exception, always. Now, I want you all to close your eyes. Everyone listening to this broadcast, close your eyes right now. I'm going to give you a little simple demonstration in common sense. You need to know this, and you need to conduct this little experiment. Close your eyes, everyone. Lean back. Just let your head relax. Relax your neck muscles. Close your eyes. And then adjust for a few seconds. And then I want you to use your imagination, just like you did when you were a child. And on the inside of your eyelids or in your mind, I don't care how you choose to do it, I want you to picture a map of the United States of America, including Hawaii and Alaska. And if you want to, if it's easier, you can even include the nation of Canada because it applies. Then on this map, I want you to draw the lines of all of the different states. If you're not absolutely accurate, don't worry about it. I think that most of you will be able, with your memory, to pretty accurately depict a map of the United States of America in your mind. After you have delineated the boundaries of all of the states, I want you to put a dot on that map for every city and town and village that exists in this great nation everywhere. Now, if you're really doing it correctly, you should have so many dots on that map that you probably couldn't count them in quite some time, because that's really how many cities and towns and villages there are in this country. Now, I want you to understand, while you're sitting there with your eyes closed, looking at this map with these thousands and thousands and thousands of dots on it, I want you to understand that at any time, any hour, any moment of any week or month or year, in any of those cities or towns or villages, at any time, anybody who wants to can purchase any type of drug that they want with no problem whatsoever. Now, ladies and gentlemen, realizing that, you must realize that there is an organization set up with a logistics system that is able to grow, harvest, refine, manufacture, transport, and deliver all of these drugs to all of these cities, towns, and villages with an umbrella of security and protection that is the best in the world, bar none. I want you also to understand, while you're conducting this little exercise, that the amount of money produced by this network of drug sales on all levels, production, manufacture, wholesale, and retail, is an amount beyond your capability to even comprehend. Now, if you understand all of those things, you can now open your eyes. And while you have your eyes open, you can think about everything that I've just told you, and I'll be back to talk about it in just a moment.
Back to happy when you know where left to.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Hour of the Time is brought to you by Swiss America Trading. 1-800-289-2646. They specialize in non-reportable, non-confiscatable, real, hard assets. Gold and silver coin. Real money, as defined in the Constitution and in the law. Not that funny stuff that you're carrying around in your pockets, which value depends simply upon your ability to believe that it does. I want you to call Swiss America Trading. I want you to thank them for sponsoring this broadcast. I want you to tell them that you're a steady listener to the Hour of the Time, to William Cooper, and that you appreciate the fact that they make this broadcast available. Then I want you to ask for a free copy of their newsletter. And before you hang up, ask them how you can get your hands on some real money. And don't be afraid to tell them exactly how much you can afford to spend, because that makes it a lot easier for them and for you. They can set up a program for you, and it doesn't take a whole lot of money to participate. Everyone should have at least a significant portion of all of their assets in gold and silver coin, because that's the only thing in an economic collapse or in runaway inflation that will preserve the real value of your assets. 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. Do it now. You'll be glad that you did. Or, if it's easier to remember, 1-800-BUY-COIN. Do it now, folks. Don't procrastinate. Haven't you ever wondered, ladies and gentlemen, how the United States government can track a piece of technology from manufacturer to wherever it ends up in Iraq or Iran, anywhere around the world, anytime they want to? But they can't identify and arrest those who are bringing the drugs into this country. And they never will, because it's them to begin with. You see, let me explain to you what drugs are really doing, besides what you think they're doing. You see, drug use is a victimless crime, which is an oxymoron. You cannot have a victimless crime, ladies and gentlemen. You must have a victim to have a crime. So this whole thing, these types of so-called crimes never existed in the history of our country until they were created. And drug use has been as much a part of the American scene since its very beginning as drinking tea or coffee. If you don't believe that, then you just start studying the history and the truth of drugs. Almost every medicine that was ever sold in a drugstore contained some kind of drug or other that is now illegal. Coca-Cola, in fact, ladies and gentlemen, began and became so popular and cornered the soft drink market by addicting its customers to cocaine, which was a major ingredient in Coca-Cola. What a way. What a way to establish a monopoly with your product. But that's something that you need to dig up on your own, in your own time, because there's more important things that we need to be discussing right now. Why did they have to create a whole new class of crimes that by definition are not crimes at all, and that no one had ever been concerned about in the history of this country, because drug use had never presented a big problem in this country until drug use was made a crime? Now, folks, in order to understand this, you're going to have to put aside your preconceived prejudices and notions and what you think you know about drugs, because most of it is just simply not true. And I'm not advocating drug use. I do not use drugs. I could care less, except for the fact that it is being used to help destroy this country. You see, drugs do several things. Number one, as long as drugs are illegal, the price of these drugs can be maintained at a much higher level than they ever would be if they were not illegal. This produces unbelievable amounts of money that you cannot even conceive of, and that nobody really has a real figure to represent, because it's all hidden. What we do know, ladies and gentlemen, this is what we do know, that the entire sale of drugs in the United States of America produces an amount of money greater than the gross national product every year. That's what we do know. We don't know how much more than that is actually represented in those transactions, because it is much more than that, I can assure you. Where does all this money go? But more important than that is that you understand that this money is generated, and it's going someplace. Now, one thing that you may not have realized in the past is that drug addiction is a form of slavery. It is enslavement of those addicted. And those addicted are at the mercy of their slave master and will do his bidding, whatever that bidding happens to be. It is a form of euphemistic slavery, but nevertheless, it is slavery. A person addicted to drugs must have those drugs. Must have those drugs. That person can no more do without those drugs than all the rest of us could do without water. They must have those drugs. It is a physical and mental addiction from which they cannot escape. Now let that sink in. And because they are enslaved, they are used by their masters. For instance, by creating victimless crimes which hurt no one except those who participate in drug use, and whether you make it legal or illegal or just ignore it altogether, people who are going to be addicted to drugs are going to be addicted to drugs regardless. The problem with it is, because it is a crime, now they must be arrested, they must go through the court system, and they must ultimately be imprisoned. The United States of America now has in its prisons, ladies and gentlemen, more people than any other nation in the entire world per capita. 5 out of every 6 of those people in prison are there because of drug use, are in some manner participating in the sale or profit of drugs on some low level. And I mean low level. They're just the local guy that stands on the corner and sells the drugs to whoever drives by and wants to buy them. The pusher, as he's called. Nobody is in jail, ladies and gentlemen, who is at the very highest or even middle echelons of this process. Those people aren't touched ever. They're protected, guarded, concealed. You see, the drug war is a sham. It is, in fact, a lie. It's not a war on drugs at all. It is a war upon the Constitution for the United States of America and the Bill of Rights. In order to get you to give up your freedoms, all they have to do is withdraw in whatever area they wish to increase the crime rate. They withdraw the supply of drugs. So there are more people who want less drugs, and at the same time, because of the law of supply and demand, which dictates price, the price escalates way up beyond the ability of those who could afford to purchase those drugs to now be able to obtain them. So now, in order to feed their addiction, which they must commit crime. They must rob. They must steal. They must mug. And yes, even murder. In order to obtain the money to feed their addiction. The crime rate and statistics go through the roof. The public, the sheeple, then cry out, "Oh, we're in danger. They're going to come and kill us in our bed." When the truth is, ladies and gentlemen, most of this crime stays in the neighborhood where these people live, where they work, where they play, where they indulge in their habit. But the middle class that's comfortable is afraid. Their security is threatened because they see numbers. Never mind, they don't understand how to interpret these numbers. They now scream for more control. Polls are conducted where they are asked if they are willing to give up some of their freedoms in order to get the drugs and the crime off the streets. And they say, "Yes, oh please." And on their knees they beg, "Please take away our freedoms in order to get the drug and crime off the streets." The city, the county, the state, and the federal government enact laws which take away those freedoms, which give more powers to the police and to government. When these laws are passed, they bring more drugs into the area because they cannot cure the addictions, ladies and gentlemen. They bring more drugs into the area quickly. They lower the price. The crime disappears. And you believe that by giving up some of your freedoms, you have succeeded in your war upon drugs and crime, and nothing could be farther from the truth. The drugs are still there. The crime can be created again by the same process. So you have enslaved a certain portion of the population. You have rendered them ineffectual as people. You have stripped them of their dignity. You've made them outlaws. They can now be manipulated to create crime or to make crime seem to disappear at will. It funnels unbelievable amounts of money into the pockets of those who are trying to bring about world government. For it goes into the coffers of the international socialist subversive networks, into black projects that you cannot imagine, into the development of the technology in these black projects that will be used to control the population of the world in the future world totalitarian socialist utopia. And as soon as that utopia becomes a reality, ladies and gentlemen, and they no longer have the need for this process, drugs will be made legal and will be sold everywhere, and anyone will be able to buy them. Because they also know that if you're addicted to drugs in the New World Order, and you can buy them freely at a low price anytime you want, and they make sure that you have a job 4 hours a day where you can earn enough money to be able to feed your drug habit, you will never give the puppet masters one single bit of problem in the New World Order. You see, you will be a slave to many things at that point. Now, I reported all this in my book, Behold a Pale Horse, many years ago. I was lecturing about this in 1988. Everybody said I was crazy. Well, over the years, everything that I have written, with the exception of a few things in my book, have come true. Everything that I've warned the American people about has actually happened. And now William Cooper is not crazy anymore. He has now reached the status declared by William Jefferson Clinton in a White House memo as being the most dangerous radio host in America, because he tells the truth and he documents it. And so, for the second hour, you're going to get another aspect of all of this, and you're going to get all the documentation that you need to be able to research this and determine on your own whether or not I have told you the truth. What you're going to find will amaze you, because I am telling you the truth. And every area of your research will do nothing but verify it. Now, I'm going to tell you who set up these operations to begin with. It was George Herbert Walker Bush, when he was the president and CEO of the offshore oil division of Zapata Oil. George Bush was a Central Intelligence Agency operative since he left Yale, ladies and gentlemen, and was intimately involved in the invasion of the Bay of Pigs. In fact, one of the ships carrying supplies for the Cuban rebels was named Barbara. Another one was named Zapata. And Georgie Boy set up the importation and sale of drugs into this country in the early 50s by bringing them in from Central and South America on shrimp boats and fishing boats to the offshore oil platforms, where the cargoes were transferred to crew boats and sometimes to helicopters, and were brought in bypassing completely any customs or law enforcement inspections. Since then, this whole process has become much more sophisticated, and it is, in fact, an octopus that encompasses and has corrupted all levels of just about all of the city, county, and state governments in this country, and most of the officials, judges, and police organizations that exist in America. An umbrella of protection exists that, ladies and gentlemen, is impenetrable, and everyone who has tried to penetrate it and actually go after the real cause and the real leaders and the real kingpins of this operation always, without exception, either end up dead, are standing in front of the national security apparatus where they are told in no uncertain terms not to proceed any farther. Don't go away. I might be back, and you'll have to listen to some more. Thank you. This is the Voice of Freedom. Listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network with studios in Eager, Arizona, broadcasting on satellite GE1, transponder 7, 7.56 audio, and over 700 FM stations across the nation and around the world.